coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm.
Well, hello everybody, and happy Tuesday night. So glad to be coming at you live this week. We will have some pre-record coming up here soon, folks, as I will be returning from Cygames. Very, very much looking forward to the inaugural Cygames. I'm so glad to hear that Hakeem and that crew managed to sell out their premier event. Groundbreaking event. It's going to be great. I cannot wait to go to it. We have some great guests tonight. In the second part of the episode, we will be joined by John Brandenburg to talk very shortly about the Clementine missions. Very, very shortly about the Clementine mission, as well as Mars and his books, things like that. And in the first segment, I am very, very glad to welcome back to the show our friend from the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance, Dan Harari. Welcome back. How have you been?
Thank you, brother. It's very nice to be back. I've been okay. I've been really busy with my various UFO insanity. You know, I still run a PR business to pay the bills.
Yep.
I have a fairly new dog that I've been training, so I spend a lot of time with my dog.
Oh, that's
and
awesome.
And my friends, and I read, and I hang out with my daughter. But overall, the UFO side between Contact in the Desert, HDA, and I know a bit later you and I want to talk about the WOW signal, news website. So, you know, things are steadily busy, I'd say.
Well, and you like so many people in the world of research into UFO, UAP, we were just talking before we went live. It is such a passion project. Like it is an all-consuming fire. You know, and it's one of those like, yeah, you spend hours and hours and hours and hours on it, just connecting people. And you especially, Dan, you are all over social media. You're all like, I get emails from Hollywood Disclosure Alliance and WOW Signal and everything else on the regs. So you are consistently putting updates out there, letting people know, building those literal bridges amongst the disclosure community. So congrats, man. It's great to see you working in the background.
Thank you. That's very sweet. And actually, that's a really good way to say it because, you know, I'm a natural born communicator. I've always been, you know, I've been a Hollywood publicist for almost 45 years. But since I really got immersed in ufology, deeply immersed. Only 2 years, man. It's only been 2 years. My book, After They came out in March 2023. I had been studying ufology before that. I had had several UFO encounters before that. I had become a member of MUFON SoCal in 2007. But when my book, here's what happened. And I'll do the condensed version. But in March 2023, my book, right here, my baby, After They Came. This is my. I have a son, a daughter, a dog, and this book is my fourth child. In fact, it's on audiobook, Chris. It just came out on audio on Amazon.
Awesome.
Please tell all your people it's on Amazon. Help a poor, struggling Beverly Hills publicist.
That's right.
There it is, audiobook. $0 with membership. Yeah, I'm going to make a lot of money. Clearly, you want the audiobook. $0. I'm cleaning up there, huh? Now I can retire to Hawaii.
I'm a subscriber, though. I'm a subscriber to such things. So
yeah, there you go. Well, you might enjoy it. It took me a year and 4 months to record.
It's like, it better not be free.
It better not be free. My book came out March 23. I met Stephen Bassett. Now, the story behind the book is just the reason I'm here tonight, and I'll do this really quickly because I've done this so many times. But in March 1970, when I was 13 years old, my father picked me up one day from school in suburban New Jersey, drove me home from school, daytime, a huge UFO craft, silver V, like the letter V, like a Victor, hovered above my father's car. Daytime, my father's driving me home, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I looked through the windshield. I said, Dad, stop the car. There's a UFO above us. Stop the car. We got out. We looked up, Chris. There's this enormous, unbelievable, you know, eighth wonder of the world, V. It's just this enormous silver V. It's hanging above my father's car for no apparent reason. And I'm now I'm 13. And I'm jumping up, Dad, look, Dad, it's Star Trek. Dad, it's Star Trek. Chris, you and I would be like, oh, my God. My father looked at it. My father was bored to tears. He couldn't care less. He looked at this thing like a head of cabbage at the supermarket. No interest. Okay. I forgot about that. And I did this story with you before.
I'll just do the summary.
You know, I forgot that that happened for 47 years. Which is probably the most amazing part of the whole story.
Yeah.
Is I forgot that that happened for 47 years. So 47 years later, 2017, my father passed away in Florida. He had a bad death. He died. I get the call. I'm here in L.A. A couple of days after he died, I went to a local deli here in L.A. to get a pastrami sandwich and to mourn my father. And as I'm sitting at the restaurant, a beam of light or a beam of energy hit me in the head. Hard, and then through my eyes projected, and I've told you this story, and it's true. Steve Bassett said, Dan, that's the most amazing story I've ever heard. Steve Bassett told me that to my face. It played the whole movie from 47 years earlier, whole movie of the 1970 UFO sighting played in the air as a color 3D hologram with audio. I'm now watching, in 2017, I'm watching me, my father, my father's car, and a silver V from 1970, and it's playing in a deli when I'm waiting for my sandwich, right? So that was just, I still can't believe it. Every time I think about it, I'm like, how, why, what, who, what? Now, after that, I heard in my ear, right after, it played for 20, 30 seconds, and then it dissipated, and then it was get a pen, I heard. My hand wrote, my hand did automatic writing. My hand wrote, write a book about benevolent aliens. Lead character's father knew about UFOs. ATC, all capital. So that's, then everything stopped. That was supernatural. I held this piece of paper.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ATC, ATC, aliens. What could that be? I came up with after they came. And I ate my sandwich and I drove home. Okay, I had to write a book. Now, here's what's very interesting. And some of this I may have told you last time, but I don't remember. Mm. I go home, Chris. I call my mother. My mother was my father's first wife. Now, my father worked for the U.S. Army for 45 years. My father was a physicist and electronics engineer at Fort Monmouth Army Base in New Jersey. Top secret. We knew he worked on radar and missiles. That's all we ever knew. We never had any specifics about what my father really did for a living. Nobody even knew, including my mother. So I called my mother right after my father died. I said, did Dad ever talk about UFOs? She said, in the early 60s, they took your father deep into the vault at Fort Monmouth Base. They showed him something above top secret. He came home. He was very upset that night. He was pale and shaking and nervous, my mother said. And she said to him, honey, what's wrong? My father said to my mother, I saw something today in the vault at the base. It's above top secret. I could never tell you or anyone as long as I live.
Wow.
My father walks down the hall. My mother said, your father was never the same after that day. Okay. Now, that's part of the story. Now, after that, I have my little props here.
Okay.
Okay. After that, I go through my scrapbooks. After my father died in 2017, I went through my scrapbooks to look at pictures of my dad. I found this in one of my scrapbooks, Chris. This is a profile of my father at his workplace from 1985.
Oh, wow.
My father invented laser-driven drones for the Army.
What?
Proof. I have this right here. It's in my hand. My father invented drones with lasers for the U.S. Army in 1975. He tested the first one ever at White Sands Missile Range, October 75. It's right here. Okay.
Wow.
My father invented drones. Okay. Nobody knew that. So that's pretty cool, right? Now the story continues. As I'm writing this book, thinking about my father, I happen to be reading Richard Dolan's famous book, UFOs and the national security state. In the back of this book is a glossary of UFO sightings above U.S. military bases. In 1951 and 1952, right when my father started working at Fort Monmouth, there were famous UFO sightings above Fort Monmouth on radar. My father worked in the radar branch. He had to have known about it, had to. Absolutely had to have known about it. Yeah. Okay. Now, moving on. I just read this book a month ago. This is the history of Fort Monmouth where my father worked. These people, including my father, but starting in the 20s and the 30s, they invented radar, walkie-talkies, FM radio, yeah, night vision, ground-to-air radio, weather and TV satellites, drones, and hundreds of things they invented where my dad worked. And see, this is the U.S. Army's House of Magic. So where my dad worked was like, it was like the geniuses of American scientists.
Yeah.
Were creating FM, think about just alone, FM radio, just alone FM radio. Yeah. How about that? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's that. Next part of the story is, in 2023, Stephen Greer did a press conference on TV from the Washington Press Club.
Yep.
And he showed a chart of 150 U.S. military bases that he has proof of through his whistleblower network that worked on recovered reverse engineering of recovered ET craft. Okay, so I'm watching this on my TV. We all have a big TV. I freeze-framed this slide. It was a slide of 150 U.S. bases. So, Chris, I freeze-framed it. I got up on my TV with my finger, and I went number 51, Fort Monmouth, New Jersey.
Yeah.
This, so according to Stephen Greer, wow, he has proof that they worked on it. Okay, and now here's the last, here's the little cherry. I just read this book, Joe McCarthy, Fort Monmouth and the Deep State. Someone just told me about it. I read it this summer. This book, long story short, Joe McCarthy uncovered in one of his Army hearings the fact that where my father worked, Fort Monmouth Radar Division, was involved with Project Blue Book. First and only time it was ever revealed is in here. When I saw it, hackers, I'm like, that's it. That's it. So my father knew about UFOs.
Wow.
That's good. And when he looked at that craft when I was 13 and he looked at it bored to tears, that's why. Now, when I had that home movie, it was 3 days after he died. Here's what I truly believe in my heart. I believe that my father went to heaven and sent me that home movie from heaven, from the other side, to say, Danny, remember the UFO we saw 47 years ago? I knew about that. I was involved with that. I was part of that research. I could never tell you or anyone because of my NDAs. I'm dead now. I have no more NDAs to protect.
That's right. That's right.
My father sent that to me from heaven. Okay. All of that comes together, and then I write my book After They Came. Was born. It was given, I think it was a gift given to me from my father.
Beautiful.
Okay, and the book is about two benevolent aliens. It's sci-fi, inspired by true events. They come to Earth to save mankind. They save the life of this drowning lead character. Page one, he's drowning. His 70th birthday, hates his life. He's suicidal. He's killing himself in the Pacific. This huge craft comes out of the Pacific, beams him up, saves his life, travels across L.A., deposits him at Dodger Stadium, live in front of the world's press corps and the Army and the military and ambulances and fire trucks. Everything's there. And these two beautiful aliens, 7 foot tall Pleiadian, male and female, that come down gorgeous. People of Earth, don't be afraid. We're here. We love you. Everything's cool. We've come to save mankind. We have a relationship with this guy. They beam down this guy who just was drowning. We saved his life. Bring him your problems. He is our ambassador to mankind. And we will work through him to use our technology for peace and good. They leave. This schmucky guy's on the ground. And now he's the most famous man in the world. Right? Because he's on live global TV with aliens and with this huge ship. The ship leaves. And they're like, who the hell are you? He goes, I have no idea what's happening. I have no clue what's happening. That's the whole book, and I'm not going to just tell any more about the book. But it's quite good. I'm pitching it right now for a TV series.
It is a fun read. And I remember I interviewed you shortly after the book came out. It was Earl Grey that introduced us.
Yeah, 2 years ago. That's amazing. May he rest in peace. Yeah, absolutely. Poor Earl.
And you know, that brings us to let this be our kind of pivot point into the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance and the starting of that, Dan, because once again, that was a very short time ago that the push for this really began. And it's been amazing to see literally the mountain that has been built out of the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance since like, hey, we're starting this thing with Steve Bassett, to now where you've got a massive network of people and a beautiful mission of really trying to change the machine that is Hollywood. Because once a through line for anything, it doesn't matter if it's a comedic through line, like, hey, if it's a buddy cop comedy, like, that's a 10-year through line. Like, every studio's on it. Everybody's making a version of it. Things that, you know? Right. And when you're talking aliens, like, that has rode crests and troughs, you know, from the time. And there was a huge lull between almost between E.T. and Fire in the Sky as far as, like, major alien movies that really made money and had any kind of impact like that. But even then, it's interesting to see the way that those movies are portraying the alien contact experience and the way that alien contact would be handled.
Absolutely right. Okay, so yeah, this was a pivot. Exactly was the pivot. So when my book came out, it was March 2023, I went to a number of UFO conventions. One of them was UFO Con in San Francisco. I met Steve Bassett there, March 2023. I gave him my book. We became friends. We exchanged phone numbers. And he lives in Washington. I'm in L.A. And I said, are you ever in L.A.? He goes, quite often. So then 2 months later, the end of March 2023, he came to L.A. Let's have lunch. We had a very long lunch in Hollywood. He told me his life story. I told him my life story. I knew who he was, but we were strangers. And at the end, Chris, he looks at me, he goes, Dan, you're a Hollywood guy, I'm a disclosure guy, what can we do together? He literally said those words. I looked up at the ceiling and I said, Stephen, we're going to create the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance. And I shook hands with him. And he said, that's it. That's exactly right. Now, neither of us knew what it was, man. We didn't know what it was. It was literally three words. That's all we have. 4 days later, that year, was Contact in the Desert 2023. Stephen invited me there. I was his guest. He introduced me to Richard Dolan and Nick Pope and George Norrie and Ron Janix and Ron James and Paul Hynek and Katy Page and everybody you could think of. And we were telling everyone we're going to create the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance. The first person literally that we told, Chris, was George Norrie. He put his hand on my shoulder. I'd never met him before. He goes, Danny, I want to be your first member. I go, George, you're the first member. Nick Pope was the second member. Richard Dolan, I think, was the third. So, you know, so at the end of that contact, Chris, we had three words, Hollywood Disclosure has three words, and we had every major UFO researcher in the world. We had no logo, no website, no mission statement, no business plan. We had nothing. That's all we had. Summer, fall 2023, Stephen and I met countless times. What is it? What is it? What can it be? What is it? We don't know what it is. So Stephen came up with, it's a networking group by which we blend together two disparate, historically disparate groups, UAP, ET, experiencers, researchers, and disclosure advocates with Hollywood. And the word Hollywood means the entertainment industry. Okay, but Hollywood's a sexier word. With Hollywood writers, producers, directors, performers, podcasters, radio show hosts, content creators. Okay, now with Steve's years, 30 years in disclosure and my 40 years in Hollywood, we literally, and there you go, there you can see some of our affiliates. Yeah. We cut and pasted together our friends, our peers, our colleagues, our clients, people we know and love. My daughter created the logo and the website. My daughter, there's Anjali right there, that pink one. That's my daughter's logo right there. She created the HCA logo and the website. And we put together all our people together. We only launched officially in November 2023. We are less than 2 years old. Today, we have 225 members. You are one of the members.
Yep.
We have members all over the world. Half, again, are on the UAP, let's call them experiencer researcher side. The other are on the content creation side. And we have a live event every quarter in LA. If we had money, I would do them all over the country, but we don't have money. We are a 501c3. If anyone's listening wants to make a donation,
absolutely,
go there and donate. If anyone out there wants to become a corporate sponsor, contact me, and then you will instantly become my new best friend. We need a corporate sponsor. There's so much I want to do with this group.
Yeah.
We need a hero with 50 grand. I mean, really, to be honest, I want to do an annual HDA media awards banquet event in Hollywood. And, best portrayal of ufology in feature films, documentaries, books, TV shows. Lifetime Achievement Award. Of course, Steven Spielberg would get the first.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
And I can reach these. I met Steven once, but I mean, I can reach them.
Yeah.
I have the means by which I can reach these people. So we have a live chat room. That's really where a lot of activity takes place. People talk in there. If a documentarian is saying, hey, I'm doing a new project on people who have had contact with Pleiadians. Well, I have a good friend named Mark. He lives in the Bay Area. He's been contacted by Pleiadians for 60 years, and they have helped him along his whole life path. Or if a documentarian says, I'm making a film about women who've been abducted and given birth to hybrid children, okay, I know three women in the HDA right off the cuff who have had that terrible experience. Mm. It's we have an agent on our board of directors. His name is Sean West. He goes, Dan, the HDA is the ultimate UFO casting call resource. If you're having a film, a feature film, a TV show, or a documentary, and you need anyone in ufology, you go there and you're going to find 5-6 people that are going to have either interest or experience or knowledge about the subject that you are pursuing.
You know, that is a really, as a content creator, Dan, that is a huge resource to have, to because here's the thing, man. Like, even as a former on-air producer for alternative media, like, part of my job was Google stalking people, and I lightly joke with guests all the time.
I like that term.
Whenever that's they're good. Like, "My God, how did you find that out? Like, how did you dig that up?" And it's like, "Yeah, it used to be my job to Google stalk guests for a host."
Oh, I love that. I'm going to steal that.
but quite literally, it's the fact of, like, there is a process that you have to go through, not even finding people, but vetting people and making sure that, you know, they're trustworthy and things like that. So the fact that you guys have already assembled this literal superstar list of not only researchers, but experiencers that can be on screen, that are used to being on screen, that have been on Ancient Aliens and other such documentary shows and movies, is fantastic. And it's an amazing resource to be able to lean on for stuff like that.
Thank you. Well, my personal goal with HDA is to help nurture and develop the next generation of feature films, TV shows, and documentaries based on real life experiences of real life people. And like you just said, Chris, we have at least 100 experiencers in this group. And now, you know, like, okay, so, I mean, Travis Walton's in the group. We all know his story.
Sure.
Whitley Strieber's in his group. Nice guy. Both of those guys are lovely. I've met them both twice. Great guy.
Yeah.
But there's around the world, there have to be hundreds of thousands of people who have had extraordinary experiences, Chris, that you and I and Richard Dolan and Nick Pope and Steve Bassett never, ever heard about, ever, never once.
Yeah.
They've never had the courage. They thought they'd be ridiculed, right?
Yeah.
Their parents, if they were a teenager, parents would put them in an insane asylum. I've had four experiences personally, myself, three of them were remarkable UFOs. One was, I'm not sure what the hell it was. But there are a million stories. Yeah. And if Hollywood, Stephen thinks, here's what Stephen Bassett thinks. And Stephen's my best friend, so I can say nice things about him, and I can disagree with him as well. Stephen said, Dan, the day disclosure happens, everyone in Hollywood is going to discover our website, and our phones are going to be ringing off the hook, and our thing is going to explode.
Yeah.
Okay, that's well and good. Now, Chris, before we went on the air, and I've been very depressed since contacting the Desert Ender, yeah. I truly do not see Big D disclosure happening anytime soon. I don't think President Trump or the new Pope or King of England or Putin or Netanyahu, I just don't see it. I don't see that they have any gain. What would be any of their gain?
Yeah.
It's just fraught with problems. Fraught with. Yeah. Now, unless the ETs land, like in my book, they land in Dodger Stadium. It should only happen. But unless they do that, what gain do they have? You know, mm-hmm. like think of all the lawsuits and all the.
Yeah.
And all the legal things, and how come you didn't tell us, and you've been lying? It's just fraught. There's no gain for any world leader. My personal thing would be, if I think the new Pope, if any one world leader could do it neutrally, I honestly think it would be the Pope, right?
Yeah.
Especially the new Pope's American. That'd be cool.
Yep. And, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because all of a year and a half ago, there was the large NASA panel that was done, where they actively brought in like 12 theologians to talk about, like, and literally that Brookings Institute way of, if we have this larger discussion, what does that do to things? Because that is something that, like, yeah, it's going to shake the foundations, any announcement like that.
Oh, my God. Well, Danny Sheehan's New Paradigm Institute is working on that. That's what they're all about. They're like, this is just going to blow. It's going to blow everyone's mind. I mean, Chris, even you and I mean, we know this is real. We've known this is real. I've known it for years. You have known it for years.
Yeah.
But if Trump went on TV tomorrow and said, look, it's time. Here's what we know. And they said things that we had never heard about, you know, like they gave us free energy in the 50s. Mm. No, but our military doesn't want it out because it could be used for bombs or something.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much. It's such a huge subject. That's why this is so fascinating. Lately, I've been telling people I'm a 20-year student. I'm a 20-year student of ufology. I've been studying this intensely for 20 years. Here's ufology. Wait, I'll do it with my hands here. Here's ufology. Here's all the knowledge in the world of ufology. Here's how much I know.
Yeah.
I know this much.
It's literally like the visible spectrum versus the actual spectrum.
Yeah, that's exactly.
It's
that's
like
exactly.
I got three nanometers of knowledge.
I know the head of a pencil tip, Christopher.
Absolutely.
That's what I know. And then Richard Dolan, right, knows this, right? And people like that. Here's, I mean, Anavi Loeb probably knows this, but what you and I know, man, it's the tip. It's the scrapie. Yeah. It's the scrapings.
Well, and, you know, but what's funny is when you watch any of these things long enough, when you metric these things out long enough, Dan, it doesn't take rocket math to figure things out and see things. My prime example would be the whole drone situation that happened in Jersey.
Right.
Like, I literally had to recall a guest so that we could do an update. I was like, I've never done this. I've never had an episode where we pre-recorded and literally called so many things that 3 days later, every single one of them came true. Where it was like, oh, we just saw them talking about, you know, how like they just had the big UFO hearing. And they were saying that, you know, these things were appearing over sensitive areas. Well, why aren't we having a bigger conversation? Well, because it would point out a gaping hole and our ability to detect these platforms over sensitive areas. Then suddenly there's drones over sensitive areas that we can't detect and do things with that are popping up everywhere. And it's like, guaranteed next, they're going to have a funding hearing about how do we get funding to find out about the drones. And that's what happened. Like, it plays out like a Hollywood script. Like, it is formulaic as watching Law and Order. Where it's like the only thing that's missing is bump,
that's
bump.
Great.
You know?
That's hilarious. Well, let me ask you this. Do you know Steve Bassett's theory about drones? Because it went viral.
I heard part of it. Please enlighten our audience.
All right. I believe, and Danny Sheehan believed that what Stephen came up with was correct. We all know the huge drone flap, mm-hmm. right? It was late last year, early this year. My mother lives in New Jersey. She goes, Danny, there's drones. Well, should I be afraid? I go, Mom, you're 90 in a wheelchair. I don't think the drones...
They're not coming for
I
you.
I don't think the drones are coming for you, Mom. I think you'll be okay. Okay? I love doing... My mother goes, you use me for comedy, don't you? I go, Mom, you're comedy gold.
That's
you're
right. Comedy That's gold. Right.
And then my mother's famous line, Danny, it's enough already with the aliens. It's enough
that's,
already.
That's my favorite one. Enough already.
I get big laughs with that. Okay, so there were all kinds of things in the skies above the East Coast.
Yeah.
Many, many, many of them were big white orbs. White orbs. Okay, a white orb is not a drone.
Yeah.
A white orb that's lit up is not a Chinese weather balloon. And it's not a drone. So according to Steve Bassett, who's been studying this every second of his life at literally 30 years, he said the U.S. military realized there was a major ETNHI flap. It's called a flap.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as they did, they said, uh-oh, we can't have the world know that ETs are here. So the U.S. military sent up hundreds and hundreds of U.S. military man-made drones. Side note, my father invented drones. I wonder what my father would have thought if he was alive today.
Call back.
Dad, you know those drones? Those are your drones, Dad.
Yeah.
I wonder what he would have said. Why? A magician, and this is the classic, and Paul Hynek says this too, a magician says, hey, everyone, look, see this card in my card? I'm going to make its card turn it into a rabbit. The guy's doing the trick with his other hand behind his back.
Yeah.
So the U.S. Army sent all these drones. They were man-made American U.S. military drones. Hundreds and hundreds. Everyone saw drones. Drones. And then Biden went on TV. Everything's cool. They're only drones. Everything's fine. They're FDA approved. Drones.
Yeah.
And then Trump goes, I'm going to get to the bottom of it, right? I'm going to. And then Carolyn Leavitt, what's her name? 2 weeks later, spoke to the president. And the president said they were drones.
Yep.
They were all FDA approved. They mm-hmm. were just drones. Nothing to worry about.
Yeah, all FDA approved.
Nothing. Oh, that's like that means anything. And remember, during when it's happening, are they Chinese? Are they North Korean? Are they Russian?
Yep.
Are they? It was U.S. military to deflect the fact that a huge extraterrestrial, invasion. Maybe they're just coming to look and say, hey, we're here. Just we wanted you to know.
Yeah.
So Steve Bassett said that on an interview, and it went viral. I think it went to like 4 or 5 million views or something.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, there is all kinds of stuff. I mean, that's literally been the scuttlebutt coming out of New York Times and things like that lately, is the fact that so many things have apparently been military guys. You know, the same way that they say the stuff from Roswell was a hot air balloon. A weather balloon.
Mogul, Project Mogul.
Or Project Mogul. Like that changes 4 or 5 times, but... the idea that they are using that as some sort of cover for other programs. And yeah, you know, it's something that we talk about with our security professional, Mike Turber, whenever we have him on, is the idea that these things and these concepts are used and latched onto for intelligence subterfuge, things like that. Like if that is something that's popping up, then sure, they will use that to their advantage to cover up black programs all day long.
Oh, yeah. Well, 3 weeks ago, I believe it was July 5th, 3 weeks ago, the Wall Street Journal wrote a big article basically through our friend Robert Salas, he's a personal friend of mine, threw him under the bus and said, because, you know, Bob Salas was at Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana, 1967, March. He's like, what is it, 20 stories underground, whatever it is.
Yeah.
He and his partner are overseeing 10 nuclear missiles in March 67. And he gets a call from above, from the security army guys that are watching the facility on the ground up above. And Captain Salas, there's a huge red-orange craft. There's an orb, a huge red-orange orb craft light. hovering above the base. It's enormous. What should we do?
Yeah.
Well, poor Bob Sells, what the hell is he supposed to say, right?
Yeah.
He goes, I don't know. You know, like, okay, keep me posted. So this guy kept calling him and calling him and calling him. Finally, the thing left. And then the next day, Bob Sells told me to my face, he said, they brought everyone back the next day. They all went in a big room, and everyone who was there the night before, and they all had to sign all kinds of disclosures. We will never tell anyone about this event, including our wives.
Yeah.
That was 1967. 30 years later, 97, Bob Sells, a hero, brave man. My father never was brave. One thing about my dad, he was not brave. He never came out to discuss this topic. I wish he had. Mm. But Bob Sells said, look, this happened. This really happened. So in the Wall Street Journal 3 weeks ago, it says that the Army was testing some kind of Fakakta electromagnetic light on a huge platform, and it was a bright orange light, and they were shining it at the facility to see if it would affect the missiles. And Bob Sells wrote back, and he said, that's BS. That is not remotely true, and here's all my proof that happened. So if they take someone like Bob Sells, right, and throw him under the bus. So your point, Chris, the obfuscation, there is no end, man. It doesn't end.
Well, and, you know, that brings up a hugely important point that we did a whole episode with our good friend Earl Gray about the Linda Napolitano documentary. You know, there have been numerous documentaries and things like that that have come out over the last year or so that have really, I think, divisively tried to put a wedge into community, you know.
And, I don't know that one.
That is the one about the Brooklyn Bridge abduction.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
That rang into a lawsuit from.
Oh right,
from
okay,
Peter
I did.
Robbins
okay, I know what you're talking. Yes, I know. All right. I know what that
because
is.
Because of
yes.
misrepresentation of things.
I know what that is. That's a fantastic story.
You know, and when you talk about things like that, when you talk about things like Tom Reed and even the Berkshire UFO thing and how that was utterly changed from other stuff, a misrepresentation of the actual story, it's fascinating when you start diving into those little wedges that are put into the community that actively make experiencers maybe not want to come forward with their story because they'd be called crazy later, you know, stuff like that.
You know, I mean, we're in 2025. You would think at this point,
yeah,
more would be known, right? Mm. You know, I've become pretty good friends with Paul Hynek, and Paul, you've interviewed Paul Hynek, I'm sure.
I have not yet.
I had a chance to
meet him at MUFON Symposium Denver. And he was crazy busy with things and never had a chance to come on the show. But yes,
you know what,
send me
an email and I'll do an email intro for you.
I will. That'd be
so,
great.
So he did 2.5 hours with Chris Ramsey a few weeks ago. I met Chris Ramsey at Contact. Nice guy. I said, I really enjoy your program. And Paul went into great detail about how his father, Dr. J. Allen Hynek, when he was enlisted by the Air Force to be the science advisor for Blue Book, he had no opinion about UFOs.
Yeah.
He didn't think about them. He didn't think it was real. You know, he's like, yeah, okay, fine, I'll just do whatever. And for years and years, he's like, okay, you know, clouds, geese, weather inversions, reflections. Okay. But then, you know, and then we all know this, the famous swamp gas incident, 1965, when he knew, because his bosses at the Air Force said, Dr., you know, Allen Hynek, you can't tell the world this was a UFO. He had to tell a packed press conference it was swamp gas. So Paul Hynek said, you know, his dad was so bummed about that event. That he said, you know what, I got to start really opening my mind more. And then the more he studied it, and he hooked up with Jacques Vallée, and they did more studies. And Dr. Allen Hynek knew something remarkable was happening. I don't think he ever saw a UFO or met an alien. But
you don't have to. And that's the thing, Dan.
That's a good point.
That's something that I bring up all the time. Like I wear my S like a Superman underneath my shirt for skeptic. I proudly call myself a skeptic. I am a, I am an experiencer. I saw something in the sky. It wasn't a craft or definable thing like that, but it was definitely an unidentified object that was flying through the sky. I have had my experiences, and I definitely tell people, no, I don't believe, because belief implies faith. I know that this is happening.
Yeah, me too. I know.
Just right, from the people that I've talked to, from the books and people I've interviewed over the many years.
Right.
It's happening. It's out there. But my job as a skeptic is to literally, not necessarily down everything, but to be waiting for the evidence that changes my mind. Just like Alan Hynek, where it's the fact of, he came into this as an utter non-believer, did not think there was anything to this. That's one of the reasons he was chosen.
Good point.
And brilliant
astronomer.
Yeah.
Brilliant astronomer.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And by the end of it, he was like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. I can't even toe this line anymore because there's something here.
Right. So if a guy like that at that level, a brilliant genius, lovely guy, never got to meet him, but brilliant genius guy, advised Spielberg on Close Encounters.
Yeah.
If he said there's absolutely something happening here, it's real. It's real. Just his story alone, it gives so much credibility. You know, I tell people, if people say, you know, Dan, there's no way, how do you know there's aliens? There's no way, how do you know? My new line on that, Chris, is I'm going to say, you know, how many years have you been studying ufology? Ron, like my best friend, Ron, okay? Ron, how many years have you been studying ufology? How many years? Zero? Okay. I've been studying it every day of my life for 20 years, my friend. When you have 20 years, come back and talk to me.
Yeah.
People that know that just out of hand, there's no such thing, it's nonsense. Chris, it's a great line, right? Excuse me. How many years have you been studying ufology? Isn't that a great line?
Well, it's a beautiful line and really, really does bring the poignancy to it. Because like I was telling you before the show, my dad is one of those that whenever I talk to him, he's like,
you can say that to him.
Say
that to your dad with love, you know.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And with open heart and open mind over a beer.
Exactly.
And it's one of those, like, you know, because I say it on the show regularly, Dan, we are not going to see a Houdini moment on C-SPAN. You're not going to see them wheel out a big gurney with a sheet over it and, aha, here's the body and
here's
the parts.
EB. Yeah, here's EB from the Roswell crash. Yeah. He's 100 years old now.
You know, like that's not what's going to happen. But what we may see, because of good people like Grush and stuff like that, who have come forth and said, it was my job to follow the halls of money. And when I got to the door at the end of the hall, they slammed it in my face. So what we may see is an Oliver North type figure who's up there at the end of it all going, yes, my name is Jimmy. I worked for this alphabet agency and it was my job to write the checks. Basically our Oliver North for this situation, who will be the fall guy who may at least say, like, yes, black programs exist and I wrote the checks for them, you know, and that'll probably be where it ends, much like Iran-Contra, once we had Oliver North, like, did anybody really dig a whole lot deeper after that?
Well, a couple of things. David Grush and Lou Elizondo had to get DOD approval for every word that they said.
Absolutely.
They did. So they had to get approval, and that's number one.
That's right.
Number two, Stephen Greer and Danny Sheehan, I believe independently, although they worked together for many, many years, but now independently, Danny Sheehan and Stephen Greer have probably collectively I'm sure it's over 200, 250 whistleblowers lined up, ready to testify, including Bob Salas, who wants to testify. Bob Salas is 84 years old. God bless him.
Yeah.
How much, you know, they should do it before he passes away, you know. But everyone's waiting for the UAP Disclosure Act to hopefully pass through Congress. If that gets passed, and Danny Sheehan and Steve Bassett have been, and Chuck Schumer and Mike Rounds, they're working on it for years now. If that gets passed, in theory, any major whistleblower can come forward and say, I have home movies of me with aliens in my basement. I dissect it. I work with aliens. They gave me the cure for cancer. You know, what could come out is incredible. But it doesn't mean that these people are still not going to be discredited.
Absolutely.
Or assassinated or jailed. Yep. Right. Whoever
Yeah.
My it's not a joke, but my theory is whoever the descendants of Majestic 12, we all know Majestic 12 was a real thing. Okay. Mm. There was 12 guys.
Yeah.
Okay, so then 20 years later, it's probably their sons, and then 20 years later, it's their sons, and then now it's their grandsons and great. Whoever that is now today, whoever holds that, it's like on the X-Files, they had all those guys, the Smoking Man them, the 12 men who knew everything. You know, whoever is controlling that information, they still don't want, they're never ever going to want to give up that power.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And there's no... I don't think that there is a point of monetization that could be hit that would make them want to give up that power. You know
it's
what I mean?
Power. It's power pure. It's pure like and
you
simple.
You could McDonald'size the technology, and I don't think it would be enough money for them to let it be known.
Well, it would end the oil age.
Oh, yeah.
It would end religion and history as we know it, and politics and money and oil. Energy, it affects every single thing. It changes every single thing.
Absolutely. And what really changes that for the second pivot of the show, Dan, is the way that those things are announced, the way that these things come to be. And that is what I love is your new effort with WoW Signal News.
Thank you.
The fact that you are helping researchers, people who are getting their research out there, their books out there, their movies out there, other amazing announcements in this stuff. That's what WoW Signal is all about. You are literally helping people put out press releases for this kind of stuff. So tell us a little bit about that and how this works into the world of Big D Disclosure that we're talking about.
Okay. Thank you very much for the plug. I appreciate it. So when Stephen and I created HDA 2 years ago, I said, Stephen, you know, because I've been a publicist for a long time, and a publicist works with media. So I said, Steve, where do people like you go? Where do ufologists go? Where do global ufologists go? What media resource, what website, what newspaper, magazine, where do you go to get your news? He goes, there isn't one such thing. There just isn't such a thing. So, Chris, for 2 years, I had in my head that it was going to fall to me to create the destination. So I came up with the WoWSignal.news, which is what you're showing now. Thank you. The WoWSignal.news. Every Monday. So what you're looking at now is from yesterday. Every Monday, I put up new news up there. We get press releases, photos, cartoons, videos, guest articles, byline opinion papers from all over the world. We launched in mid-March. My daughter, again, created the logo and the website. My daughter's brilliant. And it was set up so that people with with news, researchers, experiencers, filmmakers, like you said, man, yeah. authors, lecturers. I ran every press release for Contact in the Desert.
Yep.
I also happen to be the publicist for Contact in the Desert. but so it was incestuous there. But you know, Nick Pope has sent me information and Danny Sheehan. And Britt Elders and my brother Steve Bassett. I mean, I get Ron James from MUFON. We're blessed by MUFON. MUFON blessed us after we were up for 3 months, and they now send out our news for us as well.
Yep.
We have media partners. We promote their news. They promote our website and our newsletter. Every Thursday, a newsletter goes out based on the news of the week. And now, ideally, and I told you this earlier. Ideally, I set it up to make money because you can post the press release, and then there are different distribution options.
Yeah.
Up there, it says pricing. It says post your press release, and then there's a thing that says pricing. So that explains how it works. You can put in a press release. I approve it. If it's approved, I'll ask you how much money you could spend. And Chris, the sad thing is people say, oh, Dan, I don't have any money. I don't have any money.
Yeah.
But then the publisher editor in me goes, okay, so I read it anyway. I shouldn't tell you people that on the air, but
because I
love getting good news. I'm not going to not run news because someone can't afford it.
Well, you know, and it's something, it begs to be known. This is something that I try to explain to everybody as I'm in paranormal circles, remote viewing circles, cryptozoology circles, things like that. Most people do not realize how many researchers out there have full-time jobs. Like, this is not what they do 24/7. Nobody is scribbling them a check to go out to Göbekli Tepe three times a year and do their research.
Unless you're working for the History Channel.
You know,
something.
Even then, like, it's not like they pay you a crazy amount of money for an appearance on Ancient Aliens.
Right. You're right.
You know, like, you ain't retiring off Ancient Alien money.
Unless you're Giorgio.
Well, unless you're an executive producer on a show, things like that. Yeah. But quite literally, most people, and this is talking heads that you see on shows, things like that, folks, they run websites, they do all kinds of things to make ends meet so that they can do their fiery passion the same way Dan and I do. Like I told you before the show, Dan, this show vapidly wastes my son's future.
And I told you this my efforts killing my Hawaiian retirement.
That's right. But we do it because we love it and because we think that it is important to have the conversation. Because, I mean, that's literally how I end my show, is the idea of without the conversation, humanity doesn't move forward. So are we willing to have that conversation? Are we willing to put it out there? And that's what I love about you, HDA, and Wow Signal especially, is that you are really putting it out there with Wow Signal. It is an amazing news conglomerate for this kind of stuff that, really doesn't exist.
Well, again, going back to when I went to that deli and had that home movie experience, which was the most, and I've had paranormal things my entire life. That was the cherry.
Yeah.
I feel, like I said earlier, that my father gave me a message from heaven and said, I worked on UFOs. But I have, just recently, Chris, I've been realizing that I am so dedicated to moving disclosure forward through the HDA and through the Wow Signal. Why? It's my way. I just realized this recently, man. It's my way of paying tribute to my father.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And people have said that to me, and I'm like, wow. You know, my father gave 45 years. My father was a genius. 45 years working in top secret. My father never told his sons or my mother what he did. I mean, that must have killed. Think of it. Can imagine you come home. How was your work day, honey? Fine. And that's it. He never said to her. He couldn't tell anyone what he did his whole life.
Yeah.
So now he's gone.
Yeah.
I know he was involved. I have proof. I know it in my heart. And I'm feeling that in a way I'm helping. That's why I admire Bob Salas. He's a little younger than my father was, 10 years younger. But still the same kind of thing. I'm trying to give a voice to people through the media with HDA and a news outlet through the Wow Signal. Tell me your stories. I want to share them with the world. So at some point, Chris, you know, there'll be a tipping. I'm very big on We Are Disclosure, by the way. That's
absolutely
the thing now.
Are
Disclosure.
That's right.
It's going to be, and if it's not going to be Trump or the Pope or the King, at some point, there'll be enough, a million Travis Waltons in the world. There'll be so many. It'll be obvious.
Dan, one of the things that I bring up on my show all the time to try to bring hope to anybody in any situation where the odds seem overwhelming. It took less than 20% of the populace for us to win the American Revolution. Less than 20%. So we don't need to convince everybody. We just need to convince the right people. We just need to convince convicted people and people who have the conviction to see this through to the end. That's all that we need. So we don't need a greater overwhelming percent of the populace to, quote, get it, with my air quotes up, listeners who aren't viewing. You know, it's one of those. We can do it with the right cadre of really good, dedicated people.
I agree with you. I mean, there's so many, you know, people like you, and there's so many great podcasters. Thank you. Ross Coulthart, you know, I call him the Walter Cronkite of ufology. You know, I should have said that to his face.
Right.
I didn't think of it. But there's, you know, and then since the New York Times 2017, you know, I watch CNN. I don't know whatever people watch. But even now, man, if there's a drone story or a UFO, even now they'll go, like, sometimes they'll say, oh, Little Green Man, or they'll say the X-Files music. And it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, and they smile. I'll give you a perfect example. 1 month ago was Contact in the Desert, month and a half. CNN came. They were there for 3 days. They were there for 3 days. I worked with them. I'm in a piece on CNN. I'm in a piece.
Wow.
The 8-minute piece ran online. And unfortunately, now Steve Bassett's in it, and he came off okay. But me and others, Chris, in this piece, were kind of like the psycho, you know, the psycho alien people. They kind of made, my daughter was very upset. They kind of made fun of us believers. It wasn't an unbalanced and fair CNN piece.
Yeah.
So CNN, even a month ago, they're still making, you know, hello, people from Earth. The guy goes when he starts the interview, hello, people from Earth.
Yeah.
It's still ridicule, still open to ridicule.
Yeah. And that's just it. You know, it's one of those, what does that do to the overall conversation? How does that make people see things? You know, it's very interesting the way that media moves us, Dan. And you know, as somebody who worked in a very dedicated listener base at one point with a host that I worked with, it's amazing to see how the words of somebody can move a mass of people to action. And also to a point of action in the opposite direction, to almost recoil, you know, where it's like, oh, yeah, well, I want nothing to do with that. Or, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Look at that. Ha ha. You know, and the example that I bring up regularly, hold on, I'll put this on low, but here it is. That's the example that I still have it as a button on my show.
Is that from Dr. Strangelove?
No. That is the Michigan State Wolverine himself. that gentleman was literally two steps away from the White House against Barack Obama. He was genuinely excited. We're going to take this. We're going to go all the way to New Hampshire. We're going to go all the way to the White House. Howard Dean.
Yeah, I know. Okay. That would have been my second guess, but I thought it was the guy when he's riding the nuclear bomb in Dr. Strangelove. Woohoo!
But literally, they took that 3 seconds and punched him in the face and
ruined his life.
Got him out of politics entirely. He was second runner-up, like close, almost tie with Barack Obama until that clip, and that's all it took. So once the media grabs hold of a dialogue and starts shoving it down your throat, it's a little hard for it not to be there everywhere and for you to be inundated with it. So yeah, the idea of, once again, CNN, other news agencies coming and kind of poking fun at the event, or even jokingly doing that. It's like, would you do that at a Survivor event?
Yeah,
would you do that
point.
at a breast cancer event?
I spent 3 days. I literally spent 3 days with this guy. I got him everybody he wanted, and then I didn't tell him I was disappointed in him, but
yeah.
He could have done it better. Now, it's a lot better than it was in the past.
Oh, sure.
Mainstream media. Here's my take on mainstream media. David Grush testifies, summer 2023. There's extraterrestrial life. We have bodies living in dead. We have extraterrestrial craft, technology, everything imaginable. I know it for a fact. I swear on a Bible in front of Congress on live TV, right? Chris, yeah. I live in L.A. The next day... The L.A. Times, I get the newspaper because I'm old school and I'm an old man. I get the L.A. Times. I'm looking, right? Page 19. Three little paragraphs.
Yeah.
Oh, an Air Force guy says there's aliens. And I'm like, really? This guy went out on his limb. His wife and his life
page
are getting threatened.
Page 19. Wow.
And I said, that's it. That's when I knew. I'm like, this isn't happening anytime. Yeah. Steve Bassett thinks it's going to happen tonight at midnight. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
Well, and, you know, once again, I don't think that Big D disclosure is going to happen in any way, shape, or form that most people think it will. I think much like any kind of legislation that will protect targeted individuals, things like that, it will have to come through a legislative process. Like, it will have to come through cutting the purse strings through legislation. That's the only way that you
but
expose
the thing
these
is,
programs.
You know, the thing is, one of the books I brought up earlier, there's a theory that during World War II, the cabal that was running the call it the black government slash overseeing the UFO secret. Mm-hmm. There's a rumor that they were working with the Rothschilds and all the world banks to create their own form of wealth away from any government supervision. They have their own form of wealth by which they can do any clandestine thing they ever want for perpetuity.
Yeah.
So think about it. If Congress says to the new Majestic 12 people, oh, sorry, Majestic, they're gonna roll on for Hollywood laughter. You think you control us? Well, we have billions and billions from the Rothschilds.
That's quite literally the story of the Black Eagle Trust.
Okay.
And Emperor Yamashita's gold is that, oh, no, the CIA found that gold.
Oh, wow.
And they founded the Black Eagle Trust, and that is where they get...
That could be what runs the real power.
That is where they get their black money and everything else, is this trove of gold that was found after World War II.
I believe you, man. Our power in America is not a president, and it's not Congress. It's not.
It is an oligarchical elite. It's pretty wild. Dan, I want to thank you so much for coming on.
Sure, it's always fun, man.
Number one... I would love to have you on at least quarterly to do WoW signal updates, things
Please.
Like that. Let's definitely kick that off with this.
Right. And you're going to be a media partner.
Absolutely.
You're going to be a media partner.
Anytime and always. Before we let you go, shameless self-promotion time. Let everybody know where they can go to become a partner with WoW Signal News, where they can go to submit to WoW Signal, where they can go to check out the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance, as well as the amazing Hollywood Disclosure Alliance documentary that was just made.
Oh, yeah, we didn't get to that. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks a lot. Everyone, go to HollywoodDisclosureAlliance.org. It gives you our mission statement. All of our members are there, including Chris and myself and Steve Bassett and a lot of people, Dolan and Pope and Hynek and all the people, Katie Page and Travis Walton, all the people you can think of. Go there. There's a button that says join. So go to HollywoodDisclosureAlliance.org, click join. On the join button, it tells you some steps to go through. I'll get an email. And if you're approved by the board, you will be a member. You'll be on the website. You'll be invited to events and to the live chat room, and you'll get the newsletter. So that's that. The wowsignal.news, thewowsignal.news. If you have a press release, a new book, a film, a TV show, a lecture, an event, if you've had a remarkable experience. I love photos, by the way. So on the wowsignal.news, there's a button that says submit a press release. No, post your press release. Yeah, right there, like Chris just post. Go there. It'll give you the steps. You fill out a little form. I will get your information. I will then talk to you to see what kind of distribution you want and how I can help you get your photo, your video, your movie, your new book, your lecture, your event, your website, anything you like. I am here to serve mankind, like the famous Twilight Zone.
Right,
remember?
That's right.
It's a cookbook.
You
don't get on. It's a cookbook.
You are the
and then
waiter.
Last but not least, please, Amazon.com. After they came, this is the baby that.
Yep.
He's helping me pay for my dog because my dog only eats steak. I'm literally the only food my dog will eat is literally, I'm not kidding.
Oh my God.
So he's a very spoiled animal. After they came, it's now an audiobook. It took me a year to record it. And this is the little driver. This little baby drives Hollywood Disclosure and the WoW Signal. So check out my book on Amazon.
Absolutely, Dan.
And DanHarariAuthor.com. That's my other books. DanHarariAuthor.com is my other books. Thanks, Chris.
Awesome. Hey, always great chatting with you, man. Always great,
great
having
we'll,
you on
went
the show.
Really fast. We'll do it again, okay? Invite me back.
Forever and always, bud. You have an open invitation.
Forever and always, my brother.
Whenever you have anything to promote, you feel free to reach out to me. We are always here for you.
That's very sweet. Thanks,
absolutely.
Brother.
Absolutely.
I'm going to go play with my dog now.
You do that. I'm going to let you go. I'll be sending links to all this tomorrow.
All right, thank you.
Take care.
Bye, everyone.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dan. While you are online checking out everything from Dan Harari, folks, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can like, follow, subscribe. That's where you can find everything. That's where you can find all of the YouTube channels of our guests, including the YouTube channel of the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance, everybody. When we come back from this quick commercial break, we will be joined by the amazing John Brandenburg, right after this.
The key to good science is good research. At the heart of good research is a good data set. With the Field Observation and Encounter Log from Curious Research, you can easily keep track of your investigative information all in one place, making it easier to review cases and readily see comparisons and contrasts between them. Whether out in the woods squatching, in a back room gathering EVPs, or using high-tech gear to track UFO UAP activity, this easy-to-carry, pocket-sized scientific data log is the perfect companion for any field researcher. You can find your copy of the Curious Research Field Observation and Encounter Log at Amazon.com or visit the official Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to reserve your copy for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back from that quick commercial break. Thank you so much to Dan Hariri and the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance for their time tonight. It's always great to talk to them about the mission of UFOs, UAPs, and media and movies. And that is the second part of our show tonight, is about that as well. Thank you so much to Dan for that amazing segment. Thank you so much to everybody for hanging on through that. And also, thank you so much to our sponsors, True Hemp Science. If you're a user of CBD products like I am, stop on by TrueHempScience.com. They are your source for amazing CBD products. I have been using them for 5 years now, at least, and I love their products. They're absolutely amazing. Christopher Lynch and True Hemp Science use a spigeric process, using every part of the hemp plant, from the seeds and stems to the buds to the leaves to the fiber and the roots. Every part is used, combusted, and reused until nothing remains, providing an amazing end product full of amazing terpenes, all kinds of stuff. Stop on by and check them out. TrueHempScience.com is the website that you want to go to. Curious7 is the code that you want to use to save 7% off your entire cart of $50 or more. While you are online checking out True Hemp Science, everybody, make sure to stop on by Curious Research, as well as Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can find the books of our guest in this segment. Our guest in this segment is Victor Norgaard. He is the author of Morningstar Past, The Collapse of the UFO Cover-Up, as well as a follow-up trilogy. Morningstar Past is currently seeking movie options, all kinds of things. And as y'all know, I normally do not feature a lot of fiction on this show, but the whole reason that I had Victor on in this segment is actively because Victor Norgaard is the nom de plume for none other than the amazing Dr. John Brandenburg. Welcome back to the show, John. How are you doing?
Oh, it's a pleasure and honor to be on your show, Chris. And I'm doing very well.
We had the chance to sit down a couple years ago at the IRVA conference, the Remote Viewing Association conference in Menlo Park. That is where we first met. That's where I first heard the story of Morningstar Pass from you. And I have been fascinated with it since, because it really is an awesome story. It's great. We'll be getting into that in the later part. Before we get into that, let's start off with how you came to this realm of research and work to begin with, John, because you've got an amazing career. You have degrees in plasma physics, spent decades working in that realm. You most famously, I think anyway, as a space nerd, are known as one of the heads of the Clementine mission, as well as one of the starters of the whole Mars anomaly movement. So, yeah, like truly, truly honored past in the world of, you know, just astronomy and space and everything. Well, so
I've been extremely fortunate. And I will just say, you know, I'm just doing my job. I felt like God put me on earth to do certain things, and I'm just trying to do them. And it was not my original plan to be into Mars anomalies or things like that, or even space missions. I was focused on energy, specifically fusion energy involving plasma physics, which is, you know, plasmas are like the aurora borealis or the stars, the sun, lightning bolts. That's all hot gas that conducts electricity like metal. And when you wind that into a kind of donut-shaped magnetic field, you can then harness that to create fusion power. And that was the major focus of my what I thought my career would be. And I wanted very much to work on, you know, unified field theory and things like this, but I also wanted to get married. And, you know, and I thought, well, I better pick a field that will be well-funded as a scientist, because I knew that, you know, you're subject to government funding. So I actually felt guided to go into plasma physics, and I've never regretted that. That has been a real blessing. And we're going to harness fusion energy, the power of the stars, and that will make the Earth a much better place. It'll stop global warming and things like that. And by the way, the climate never sit still. It's always either going into an ice age or going into a tropical age. And, flip the coin. I think we just have to harness fusion energy, just because that is the direction of clean, limitless power for the human race.
Yeah.
And, So I worked on that. I wanted to be, and I was part of the Sputnik, the generation that grew up after Sputnik. So there was an enormous amount of encouragement to young people to go into the sciences.
Yeah.
And I was the beneficiary of that. My father wanted me to be a medical doctor, but when I told him I wanted to be a physicist, he said, wonderful. You know, and so I had great support from my parents for this. And but you must understand that energy has an enormous financial connection.
Absolutely.
I mean, the worst nightmare possible for some nations is that we will harness fusion power and not need petroleum anymore. For some countries, this is the lifeblood of their country.
Yep.
If that goes away, they won't know what to do. And so what happened apparently was the U.S. government decided to back off on fusion energy, even while it was making great progress, because many of our allies, especially during the war in Afghanistan, were big oil producers. So I unfortunately got my PhD in plasma physics to do fusion energy, and then all the funding dried up. We found out later there had actually been, or at least the rumor is there was a deal between Washington, D.C. and countries like Saudi Arabia that we would jointly work against the then Soviet Union. And one of the prices would be that we would stop our fusion research. So, but it can be done and it will be done. But in the meantime, I ended up having to give up my great dream of harnessing fusion, at least temporarily. And I ended up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, working on directed energy weapons, which also involve a lot of plasma physics. And I went through, there was a great nuclear crisis. It was mostly secret at the time. It came out right after the nuclear winter hypothesis in 1983. And it was called the Abel Archer crisis. We were as close to a nuclear war as we were during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And the effect on the laboratory staff was absolutely devastating. All of these people realized that their wives and children were all going to die if there was a nuclear war. And being, it was kind of, there was this feeling before that, that, well, I work on nuclear weapons and things like this, or work in a nuclear weapons lab. It's not going to burn me. And, I mean, I heard so many stories from people saying, you know, I used to think if there was going to be a nuclear war, I'd jump in my car, race home, get my wife and kids and head for the hills. And then they said, but now we're just going to have a set dinner and wait for it to come, figuring that, if they survived the nuclear blast, and fallout, they would die of, cold and hunger in the nuclear winter that would follow. So it was just devastating. Wow. And I was not unaffected by this. I felt as a result of the Abel Archer crisis, which we understood was going on, but we couldn't talk about it, that we were just going to end up having a nuclear war by accident. You know, it would be some... And that Abel Archer was, you know, almost a nuclear war by accident. And so so I was in kind of despair. And I remember then we had Christmas break where they would just shut down the laboratory where I was working. It was a government, U.S. government lab in Albuquerque and called Sandia Labs. And I was at home. But I felt this just deep depression, like everybody else I'd worked with over this. And then I saw the idea that they might have discovered this carved face on Mars. And they had a television, like a half-hour television news story about it.
Yep.
And I looked at it and thought it was quite convincing. And I thought, well, this will end the Cold War. We'll go to Mars and together with the Russians and explore this. And we're all going to be okay. And I remember putting down my little 4-year-old little daughter and reading her a bedtime story and realizing, you know, her future, she's going to have a future, a long life. And, you know, I suddenly had hope. And then when after the Christmas break was over, we're back in the lab. I reached out and made contact with the people who were doing this research, and they put me in touch with Richard Hoagland, a brilliant fellow.
Yeah.
And he also realized the great import of this to end, that we could end the Cold War and save the human race. And so we got very much involved in investigating this and discovered that everything they found on Mars was real. And we're able to verify it using NASA data. And that there was a dead civilization on Mars. There was a face on Mars, and then 6 miles from that, there was a big five-sided pyramid. And this was, if you showed pictures of the face and the pyramid in the same frame of camera frame, it was just obvious that this was a dead civilization, and the civilization looked like us.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's how I got involved. I wanted to end the Cold War. And as I joked with my good friend, Vince DiPietro, who was one of the original investigators, I said, we did end the Cold War because the face on Mars controversy continues to this day. And the Cold War has been over now for 20 years.
That's right. He started a whole new one.
We started out. Oh, yeah. We find that was 2 wars ago. So what also happened, interestingly enough, is that I became a space person. As I used my training in plasma physics and just defense-oriented things to become a space cadet. In fact, they called me that at work as a joke, just to be sarcastic with me. And I just said, well, you know, I like space. You know, I like my space. And so we ended up, the Cold War ended, and all of the people who had made fun of me for being a space cadet, unfortunately, a lot of them lost their jobs. Mm. Because they had been very oriented toward the kind of nuclear scenarios of the Cold War, whereas I had become a space cadet, which meant in the post-Cold War era, they were doing a lot of space satellite intelligence gathering to make sure that the Cold War remained, you know, that it really ended. So anyway, it all worked out. So it all worked out really well for me that I got involved in this Mars thing. Rather than hurting my career, it actually helped it.
Well, and you know, like you're saying, it brought you to the world of space work, which brought you to the world of the Clementine mission and things like that. Much later.
I was tabbed to be part of the Clementine mission. I wasn't really in charge. I was a deputy to the mission manager. Like, he was Marshall Dillon and I was Festus. but he gave me a very high compliment. He said, John, you were my tiger team. I knew if other people could not solve a problem, I could turn it over to you and you would solve it. So I was able to do that, and I saved the entire mission at one point, I'm proud to say. And we made the mission into a spectacular success. And so I became, you know, a very much a space cadet. And so I was very active with the Pentagon and the intelligence agencies involving space, gathering of space information. And at about that time, I also found out that there was a UFO cover-up. Mm. And I was dealing with people who I knew were, you know, respected professionals. And they basically confided in me, yes, that we faced an extraterrestrial threat. They viewed it as an extraterrestrial threat whose existence was classified. And this is the source of Reagan's, you know, statements that I've often wondered, if we were threatened from outer space, wouldn't we end the Cold War? The thing that helped end the Cold War was the fact that we were jointly threatened by people from outer space, specifically the people the chief villains of this, I heard, were the little short gray aliens who were doing the abductions and the animal mutilations and things like this. These people were very bad. Some of the people from out there were very nice.
Sure.
And that was always made clear to me. The universe is a mixture of good and bad. We have some bad people we're dealing with, and they're difficult to deal with. And then we have some good people we're dealing with, and they're helping us. And so I became quite familiar with the issues, both in the public. One fellow told me, he says, I basically asked him if there was, you know, this extraterrestrial threat for this systems classified, and he said yes. He said the rest you can figure out for yourself. He was a Army colonel, well, whom I deeply respected. He worked at the Pentagon at the Joint Chief of Staff, you know, support groups, and he just said, "I can't tell you anymore, but you, the rest you can figure out for yourself, just from what's in the public sphere." Yeah. And so I became very much involved in that. Also, one of my great ambitions had been to work on unified field theory, which is what Einstein tried to do, to unify gravity and electromagnetism, so you could have gravity modification, that you could change gravity with electromagnetism. And so I published a theory on that called the GEM theory, gravity electromagnetism theory. And it was well received both by the, you know, academia who were interested in that, and also by the intelligence agencies. They liked it. So I ended up publishing many, many articles on that theory, and wrote some books on it. And the government has this technology. The government has not just a theory, but they have technology.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And so, and in fact, it may have been the original effect may have been discovered by Nikola Tesla.
That I would not doubt one bit. He was an electromagnetic wizard, is the only way to put it.
Yeah, his last articles were about controlling gravity with electromagnetism.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, the secret is rotating three-phase power, the same thing that makes induction motors work.
Yep.
That he invented. He invented that.
Yeah, he did. He did.
And if you apply that to masses, the local gravity gets slightly weaker, and then if, you know, so they don't weigh as much on a scale, and then you turn off the power and they regain their weight. And I have discussed this frequently. You can go on the web and see my discussions of it. And so that, you know, and in the meantime, I was married, and then I was divorced, and then I got married again. I had two beautiful children, and my poor second wife kind of had a let's just say she left us. And I had to raise the children by myself, and I did that. So I was not only, you know, investigator and science fiction writer, but also daddy, the two small children. And all my children turned out so well. I'm so proud of them. I tell people they're my finest achievements. And God has been most gracious to me. And I felt then inspired to write a science fiction novel. I'd always wanted to write a science fiction novel. I had a friend of mine asked me, he said, I've always wanted to write a science fiction novel or a novel of some sort, but I can never seem to do it. And he said, why, how come, what does it take to actually sit down and write a novel? And I told him, I said, Bill, first have something really awful happened to you.
That's, you know.
In my case, it was, you know, my poor second wife leaving us. She had, you know, I guess, mental health issues, and she just left us. And and that was kind of nightmarish to just have that happen. Mm. And particularly the run up to that. And then I went through 9/11, which was, you know, I would have nightmares about for years afterwards.
Yeah.
And so I went through two really deep traumas. One personal and one, you know, as part of my role in the national defense. And so then when I heard that the government had actually had secret groups that were signing secret agreements with alien groups, which was a complete breach of the Constitution, I really felt inspired to write a novel about what would happen if that whole situation came unraveled. And so I wrote the novel, and in it, these two, of course, they're very glamorous news anchors one's blonde and one's Asian, and they're both you know, news anchors for a news network, and they start getting leaked documents from the U.S. government, and so they and parts of the UFO cover-up are simultaneously realizing that the people at the very top of the UFO cover-up seem to have gone crazy. I mean, what is they've gone from studying the aliens to working for them. But since it's completely secret, compartmentalized, nobody knows this unless they're part of this group. So anyway, and I will also mention, by the way, that my role on the Clementine, I would love to go into more details on that, but I was scolded when I talked about it on a television show. What they'd done is they edited some of my comments to make them sound very provocative about investigating the moon.
Well,
so I have been told, this one fellow told me, who I used to work with on that project, said, he after biting my head off over the phone, because I was a part of this television special.
Sure.
He said, "Don," he said, "you can talk about Mars all you like. Just don't talk about the moon."
And you know what's funny? What's funny is that I have said for years, even before I started this show, when people would bring up the, "Oh, we never went to the moon," this and that, I would say, "Oh, no, make no mistake. We went. We were just invited not to return."
Apparently so.
by the people who were there.
I don't know the details that I've
now,
been told.
And once again,
I'm not supposed to talk about.
I want you to go no further with that. However, I'm going to pop something up on screen. And once again, Dr. Brandenburg did not say this. I am saying this. And this is what is out there. So if you'd like to look up the Clementine spacecraft, everybody, you can see the fact that it was actively a joint project between the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization and the Strategic Defense Initiative Organization and NASA. And its lunar observations included imaging at variance wavelengths in the visible as well as ultraviolet and infrared, laser ranging, altimetry, gravimetry, all kinds of things. But the important thing is it wasn't just a NASA program. It wasn't just like a, hey, you know, we're talking the ballistic missile people and the Missile Defense Organization. Okay. So if they're interested in mapping the moon for a reason, it would either be to place weapons there or that there are weapons there. One of the two. That's what I'm saying.
I would like to respond to your with a firm no comment.
Exactly. Thank you.
I can neither confirm nor deny that the Defense Department was involved in the Clementine Project. But, so there, I'm in
my, and that's where we'll leave. And that's where we'll leave the Clementine Project.
We'll leave. Unfortunately, I have to leave it at that.
I want you to leave it at that because I like you, John. I want you around for many years to come.
But, I'll tell you one humorous moment. I was out for a stroll with a very attractive woman, and the full moon had risen. And she says, "Oh, what a beautiful moon!" And I said, "I can't talk about the moon."
Yeah, I'm not allowed to talk about the moon.
I then laughed.
You want to talk about tiny red dot in the sky? We can.
Let's just say I'm free to talk about Mars. I can't talk about the moon.
And before we get into the book, because I want to tie a couple things together. Number one, we met at a remote viewing conference, John. And one of the things that I say regularly about the International Remote Viewing Association and the remote viewing community in general is you will find more letters before and after people's names in that circle of paranormal than any other. I don't care if it's cryptozoology. I don't care. Like, guaranteed there are more PhDs involved with remote viewing than there are with cryptozoology. It's fascinating the number of people like yourself, Hal Putoff, for example, laser scientist, you, plasma physicist.
Brilliant, brilliant man.
Oh, he's busy squeezing a vacuum here in Austin, removing power from it. Like kind of physics that we're talking about here. You know, the idea of we're going to squeeze empty space and get piezoelectric power out of compressing empty space. Like, that's fascinating. And yes,
that's better than water injection carburetor I heard about as a kid all the time.
Well, and literally, John, as somebody who, like you have the paper about water vapor and propulsion.
In plasma. Microwave thruster.
Yeah.
I've been very blessed in my career. I invented this rocket engine that ran on microwaves and used water vapor as its propellant. It would turn it into a plasma. And they've flown it in space now, and it worked just great in space. Yeah. And I had a patent on it in my name, but the patent lapsed. But I did end up working for them to help them develop that satellite and made some money that way. But, then it was like, Brandenburg who?
when I met you once again at a remote viewing conference, it has always fascinated me the number of extreme science heads and extreme science people like you who are into exotic sciences, things like that. And I think the main reason is because you, much like Hal Putoff, things like that, when you're talking plasmas and excitation of energy, things like that, you are talking about literally the way that things vibrate in the real world. And you eventually come to realize that, yes, there are numerous dimensions directly around us. And they're only separated by a vibrational veil. That's the only thing that's separating us. Like
FM stations.
Yeah.
There's all these different frequencies where there's information, and you just have to know where to look. And we're constantly listening to one station, basically.
Yeah.
But the human race is inherently what you call psychic.
Oh, sure.
That's one of the things you must understand about the human race. People know when somebody's watching them.
Yep.
And you can imagine the fitness for survival. If you know when people are watching you, possible enemies, just imagine that how much that enhances survival.
Yeah.
And so, uh, So, but it goes much beyond that. The human race is psychic. That's one of the reasons, apparently, we are of such interest to our surrounding neighbors in the stars. We have an extraordinary amount of talent, apparently. You know, they're very talented themselves. But we're going to be fine. By the way, I will say that I believe with all my heart that we're going through a transition of, you know, realizing the main portion of the human age, realizing we're not alone in the universe.
Yep.
The stars out there are also homes of intelligence and civilization. And that's a little traumatic for people, but we're going to be fine.
Well,
and the human race is a bunch of really tough customers, and we're going to be fine. And eventually we will absolutely prosper in this new universe. Our future will look like Star Trek.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, you brought up something interesting a while ago, especially when it comes to the Greys. Lynn Buchanan is a good friend. Hey, Lynn.
Yes.
You know, when I asked him, have you ever remote viewed alien species? His response was yes, and specifically the Greys.
Oh, yeah. And, well, they're kind of like three quarters of the reports of what species are, you know, there are many species out there, but some species, in fact, look just like us they act just like us.
Yeah.
But the Greys are kind of dominate the reports.
It was fascinating to me because, number one, you were mentioning that they were one of the evil actors, one of the bad actors.
I'm afraid so.
However, more than likely have arrangements with governments, as people have said. And one of the
in the novel, people who've read the novel who are more cognizant of things, one of them said to me, "How did you get so many things right in this novel?" And I said, "I don't know. I just kind of connected the dots, you know, and, I'll be very frank. When I was in my early 20s, I became part of, I didn't join the Scientology, Church of Scientology or anything like that. Oh, no, that's much, much too mild. I was part of the charismatic fundamentalist movement.
Oh,
and, you know, famous from Jim and Tammy Faye Baker. Yep. But when I was part of that movement, the Pentecostal movement, and I joined it because my parents joined it, and I was their oldest child and deeply respected their choices and wanted to support them. But, you know, things that you would call paranormal or psychic became everyday occurrences for me. And so I wouldn't call it remote viewing, but I became very sensitive during that period, and that has stayed with me. I'll also say that I'm just an Episcopalian now. I saw so much Jim and Tammy Faye Baker stuff in that movement that I decided to just
all set
become an Episcopalian, Catholic life, basically. I go to church and I pray. We read the scriptures.
Yep.
I make an offering. We say, have communion, and then they say, okay, you can all go home.
Yeah. And we have donuts in the next building.
What?
And we have donuts in the next building. See you next Sunday. You know that.
Yeah. Right. So it's a that's where I got my introduction into the paranormal, psychic kind of, I wouldn't call it that. This in that movement, these are called
they're gifts.
the gifts of the Holy Spirit.
Absolutely.
And the
gift of discernment.
Other people would say, oh, you're doing remote viewing, or you're doing, you have.
You're doing the devil's work. Literally the number of people, because
I can assure you, it's just why do you think Pentecost is in the Bible? You know, the Holy Spirit to the place above people's heads. Now that's some pretty unusual things.
One of my favorites
I just wanted to say that I very much love Lynn Buchanan. Same. And his work.
Well,
and but I kind of operate in a different bandwidth than your normal remote viewing.
That
types.
Is true. That is true.
And anytime I tried to mix the two kind of methods, it didn't work. Yeah. So I just found I was kind of schooled in one way of doing it, kind of operating in one wave band.
Yep.
And they have a different wave band, and that's fine.
And you know, that's one of the things that I find very interesting about that community, is that there are so many methodologies that end up at the same data. And it's fascinating. And,
exactly.
But when I asked Lynn if he'd remote viewed, he said, yes, the Grays. And he said specifically the reason that they are coming here and talking with us is because we uniquely in the universe stand out. Specifically amongst them.
He apparently stick out like a sore thumb.
Well, and it's because of our individuality and our want of individuality. He was like, they became a hive mind generations ago. They have forgotten what individuality is. So even though they have this amazing piece of technology, because they aren't individuals, they cannot figure out and invent another way to use it.
No.
They need somebody else as a medium to go, hey, here's some cool technology. We don't know how to apply it to the future. Can you help us? For the prolongation of our own race.
Being on one of these ET ships and some ET saying, we're going to hand you an object. Will you tell us what your impression of it is?
Yeah.
Because we don't know what it is.
It basically being a Rorschach test.
Yeah, it's like or our people are baffled by this, but you humans are known to be kind of intuitive or you you could say the captain is discussing things with his first mate, and he said, we can't figure out what this thing is. Well, show it to the
show it to the cook, see what he says. Show it to the cook, see what he says.
And I, by the way, I put that kind of aspect in the novel. I had several of the aliens have, you know, personalities and I have some of the Grays are just as bewildered and fools of fortune, just like any human being is. Like, you know, imagine you're part of the Russian army invading, putting down the democratic revolt in Hungary.
Yeah,
you know, and ask a Russian soldier, well, "What are you doing here in Hungary?" You know, and he says, "Well, I'm just following orders." You know, I'm supposed to do that. So. You know, the people have said they'll shoot me if I don't follow orders. And so here I am.
Exactly.
And, a lot of human beings in history have just gotten swept up in things, and they can't. They lose complete control of their own fate, you know.
Well, that especially is the case. And it's very interesting that so much of the Big D disclosure that we're seeing, these hearings and everything else, is happening right up against the last of the generation of Roswell dying and leaving us. The last of the deathbed confessions, things like that, you know, and the timing of that, you cannot deny. You can't look at that and not see it. you know.
In my novel, the saying that a lot of the military people used was the UFO cover-up will continue till doomsday. And then as it starts coming unraveled, the military, you know, these Green Beret kind of characters whose job is that when they shoot down a UFO, they go surround it and, you know,
recovery
box
team
it up and get it someplace and keep everybody away. And so they go from saying, well, this cover up will continue till doomsday. They start saying, doomsday is coming.
Well, and you know, that is sadly a lot of the mindset, you know, when you start looking at things, especially Dan Hariri, who we just had on, like that was quite honestly the progeneration of the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance is what the typical dialogue is when it comes to movies, science fiction. Science fiction's a lot kinder, mind you, where you get a lot more of the true E.T. stories, things like that. But even E.T. had its moments where like, no, man, the government came in and booted their door down and took over the place. You know,
they did.
Like, I remember being 8 years old and watching that in the theater and going, oh, crap. Like, they just came into his house and, like, they took over. Yeah. They took him hostage. They took the family hostage. Like, everybody, you know. That was a pretty
sanitized version of the whole UFO kind of experience. The real one that I, you know, the one I'm more familiar with is in the novel, and parts of it are just like a science fiction horror movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, and only the very toughest, well-trained people are assigned to deal with it because, you know, if you send regular troops in there who are just, you know, they'll end up in fetal position in the middle of the field with their rifle beside them. And you tell them, get up there and, you know, guard this perimeter. And they say, Sergeant, I can't even stand up. My legs are too wobbly, you know. I refer to the UFO cover-up, the UFO phenomenon and world now as a wondrous nightmare.
Mm.
Because we're not just dealing with evil on Earth, we're dealing with evil from outer space. And we're not just dealing with evil, we're also dealing with great good. And the struggle for good and evil is cosmic. It's not just terrestrial. The head of the UFO cover-up, when these two women start getting, there's a leak. Somebody in the UFO organization is leaking these documents to these two women. And they're, the head of the UFO cover-up, who's known as the Wizard, you know, he says, nobody's going to pay attention to those two bimbos. But 6 months later, he's dead and his entire kingdom is destroyed. Utterly. and so he gambles and loses. So anyway, I believe it will make a great movie, and in fact, it'll have a sequel and prequels, and it'll have two sequels and a prequel. So it's kind of a project, it's not just kind of one movie. You think that it would continue?
Yeah.
So. It's about the human race basically coming of age. I'm not going to give away the plot or anything like that.
It is an amazing amalgam, though, of things that have been out there, hypotheses to begin with.
Yeah.
Once again, yeah. The whole concept of Majestic 12 is tied in there. The
Right.
There are things tied in that have happened to you throughout your career that are tied in there. There's all kinds of stuff. So it's
stuff I've heard of on the level of rumors and, I put the book through classification and I just labeled everything science fiction and they were happy.
Well,
and many of several of them read the novel that I worked with in Washington, D.C. In the meantime, I moved down to the Cape Canaveral and worked at the Space Center for NASA. And I made a trip back up to Washington, D.C. and had lunch with a couple of them, my old buddies. And they said they'd all read the novel and they really liked it.
It's a good one.
And Hal Puthoff, in fact, who is someone I did have occasion to work with, he called it, and he's Russian American, he called it the War and Peace of the UFO genre, which is very high praise coming, especially from a Russian. And another author also said the same thing. He called it War and Peace. And it's not just because it's long. Some people said, I wrote the novel too long. And I said, well, how are you supposed to write about something that's happened over 80 years and make it a small book? You know, you find the wait around long enough, there'll be a Reader's Digest abridged edition for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
One thing I recommend to people is just get the Kindle edition so you can kind of read it as a little bit every day.
Yep.
And one of the other things is I sent it to several publishers and I'd never published a novel before. So I sent it to two publishers, and both of them sat on it for 6 months and then sent me rejection letters. So I just said, well, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'm just going to self-publish. So I got to deal with it. I paid for it to get self. And so they said, and their original estimate, it was to be 1,000 pages, you know? So then I got the novel and they squeezed it into 750 pages.
Oh, that's great.
By making the print smaller.
Yeah.
And so, you can still read it and everything, and people have read it. But I tell people you're better off just getting the Kindle edition off of Amazon so you can adjust the print size to whatever you like.
Yeah.
And, it's a soap opera. I mean, it's part science fiction, part political thriller, and part soap opera.
As a comic book fan, that's right up my alley.
That's right. It was a very, very deeply meaningful thing to write, and it became so vivid the characters would actually talk to me.
Mm. Yeah.
And that was very, I mean, especially because I put the kids to bed at night around 9:30, and then I'd sit up and write on this novel. And at one point it was like past midnight. And one of the characters was going to get killed. There's a pair of women, news anchors, and they're close friends. And one of them is the blonde and one of them is the Asian. And so the blonde, I thought, was sort of, she was going to get killed at one point in the novel. And I'm writing away. And suddenly I look up and there is the Asian character, the main heroine. And she says, if you kill my friend, I'm not going to do a damn thing for you in the rest of this novel. I'm going to just shut down. And I thought, oh my God, I'm having a waking dream, because she looked like she was sitting right across the table from me.
Sass from your own creation.
It was. Yeah. And I said, I kind of looked down at the keyboard and I said, Okay, I'll tell you what. Your friend won't die. She'll just be wounded, and there'll be a big dramatic scene at the hospital where she gets saved by, you know, you're helping this. And I said, will that be okay? And the heroine said, yes, that'll be fine. Then I looked up and she was gone. And I thought, whoa, it's time to go to bed.
Right. Right.
So I shut off the computer. I saved all my work and went, shut off the computer and went to bed. And, so it's, and Dickens reported the same thing, that the characters get so vivid for him that they would start talking to him.
Yeah.
He would like to basically hallucinate them. And that it didn't happen that it only happened once or twice very vividly. But that I thought, well, okay. And so it'll make a great movie.
It's going to be fantastic. I want to thank you so much for coming on, for talking about it. Once again, I got the book shortly after we met in Menlo Park, and I've even given a couple copies to people. It's a great story. It's fantastic. Good luck with the optioning. I hope all of that goes well.
It's already been optioned. Now, of course,
too great.
You know, it's in the hands of my agent who is... can sell the property in my name, David is a real pro and has been in this business a long time. So I, on the other hand, am merely a theoretical plasma physicist. I know nothing
plasma physicist.
This stuff is I'm too stupid to know how to find my way around the block in Hollywood. Yeah. And so, but anyway, it's been such a pleasure. And what I want to mention one last thing.
Please.
I felt deeply inspired, basically as a Christian, to write this book. Somehow this all is very meaningful. In fact, that the gospel is not just for Earth. It's for the entire cosmos. And wrote a book called Cosmic Jesus that you can find on Amazon, Cosmic Jesus, where I discuss all of that. So Chris, is there anything else you want to discuss?
Offhand, that's it right now. But I would like to have you on again and again to talk about plasma physics, new technologies, all kinds of things that are emerging out there, John, because it is a rapidly changing front of technology out there.
We have made people are frustrated by the fact that the disclosure is, it's not happening as fast as they like, but it is happening.
Here's what I keep telling people on this show and on others, John. Number one, if you are looking for the aha moment, if you are looking for the Harry Houdini character walks out in front of Congress with a gurney and a sheet and pulls that off and goes, aha, here's the body in the wreckage. You're not going to see that. What you're going to see is something along the lines of an Oliver North, somebody who worked for an alphabet agency or contractor thereof, who was in charge of dispensing the funds and who will get up in his suit, hold his hand up in front of Congress and be accountable. Just like Ollie North was, former career destroyed. You took the fall for Iran-Contra and we thank you.
You took the fall,
but that's what you're going to see.
I will mention that disclosure happens in the novel where they do have emergency congressional hearings. Things get so outrageous, they have emergency congressional hearings, and they do bring out a thing under a hood and take it off, and it's an alien in a pickle jar. And they said, and they say to the national security advisor, the Congress, the senators say, have you ever seen or talked to one of these creatures? And he says, and what he does is he looks at it for a long time, and then he turns to his lawyer and consults with his lawyer and says, finally he turns back to the senator and says, I have no recollection, sir, of ever speaking to such a being.
Yeah, well, it's now referred to as the Brandenburg moment.
The Brandenburg moment. Yeah,
but in all sincerity, so, you know, anyway, that's what people are expecting, and I don't think that's what we're gonna get. We're gonna get a big D legal disclosure. We're gonna get some redefinitions of how monies are spent and dispersed, and things like that. That's what we'll end up seeing. And the ultimate admission that, because kind of like in the last hearing where they were like, so let me get this straight. You're going on record and saying that there are no crash retrieval programs. And they said, yes, absolutely. And they said, but you have gone on record and said that this person is collecting funds for their injury in a crash retrieval program. They said, yes, absolutely. It's those kind of things that you will see. Where it's like, no, we can't admit to the crash retrieval program, but we can gladly pay this guy's injuries for being in the crash retrieval program and getting hurt. Oh,
and I have several such moments in the novel, by the way. So you could say it's a fantasy, but it's also, it'll make a great movie.
Well, and I can't wait for it. John, thank you so much for your time tonight. Thank you so much for your candid answers. You're always welcome on the show. It's always a great pleasure just answering the random phone call that comes through from you. It's always great chatting, my friend. So, hold the line real quick while we close things out. And once again, thank you so much for your time, for your candid answers, everything tonight. I greatly appreciate it.
I can neither confirm nor deny that I can confirm or deny. I have that authority.
That's right. While you are online getting your copy of Morningstar Pass by Victor Norgard, everybody, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can like, follow, subscribe. That is where you can find all the episodes. That is where you can find our events page. The events page is where you can find all of the interviews from events that we attend, like the recent Roswell UFO Festival, Lone Star Paracon, Texas Bigfoot Conference, International Remote Viewing Association, and so much more. That is also where you can find your link to CuriousResearch.org. That is where you can get your copy of the Field Observation and Encounter Log. If you are an investigator in the world of UFOs, UAPs, paranormal, stop on by, get your copy of the Field Observation and Encounter Log today. All purchases made at Curious Research go to fund and help build bridges in the world of the paranormal research community. Thank you so much, everybody, as always, for your time tonight. Thank you so much for your open hearts, your open minds. That is what makes the conversation. And without the conversation, humanity does not march forward. So remember, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. To download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault, or become a sponsor of Curious Realm, visit our website at CuriousRealm.com. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast and video services, CuriousRealm.com, as well as KGRA Radio, APR TV, and the official Curious Realm app for Roku devices. Curious Realm is a proud member of the Ground Zero Media family of podcasts. For more shows and members-only content, visit groundzeroplus.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.